favorite story of mine about a little boy who was trapped in a burning building. He's on the second floor. And his father, returning home, saw the flames. The little boy, who had been sleeping, crawls towards the window and sticks his head out, and it's, of course, engulfed in smoke. The little boy's crying, of course. "Someone help me, please. Someone help me." The father's frantically on the outside trying to get in, but, of course, beaten off by the flames, trying to get into the home. He said, "Here's his son again. Someone, please help me, someone," as he sticks his little head out. He cannot see because of the smoke. Finally, the father shouts out to the boys, "Son, it's me, it's your father. Jump, jump." The little boy says, "But Dad, I can't see you." To which the father replies, "It doesn't matter. I can see you." I love that story because everything is based on the relationship, that ultimate leap. And when we think about it in terms of all of us, we'll have to take that ultimate leap. Secular world and secular society, atheists, they leap into nothing. We leap into the arms of someone who loves us. And we know that someone loves us, because we experience his love in our life in this world. When we listen to the gospel, I really wish that the liturgists and those who prepare that text would have used the first two verses and attached it to the rest of the gospel. Because those two verses, Jesus starts off by saying, "I am the bread of life. Whoever eats of this bread is satisfied. Whoever eats of this bread is one that receives him." How wonderful it is to think in terms of the Eucharist that we receive. We're being satisfied by the bread of life. And what is that bread of life? The relationship we have with Jesus. He comes to us as bread to feed us on our journey. Now today we celebrate the Feast of All Souls, the departed. I can tell you I never met my mother's mother, and I never met my father's father. They were deceased before I was born. But they were tremendously a part of my life. And I don't mean just because I carry their genes, or someone says, "Hey, you know, you look like Grandpa, or you do something that Grandma does." I don't mean that kind of sense. I mean they literally were part of the family. Because the family would get together, and periodically throughout the year, we'd head off to the cemetery. And we would go, and we'd be at each of the graves, putting flowers, taking care of them, saying a prayer for Grandma or Grandpa. And it wasn't only my family, but it was the extended family. It was my mother's brothers and sisters who had their families, and oftentimes it was my father's sister who had their families, and they would all come together. And as kids, what would we do? Going over to Grandma or Grandpa's house, we'd play. It just happened to be the cemetery that we were playing in. We'd play. And then they would tell stories about them. And we knew something. We knew that we would be with them at some time. We knew we would be with them at some time. Nothing is lost to God. And what gives us that sense is the ultimate love that is experienced in this life. It was experienced, obviously, by my mother and father, and then given to us to cherish, to hold their souls, and to understand in prayer we were connected to them. We were connected. I can tell you, looking at many of the people I know here, those of you who have lost a parent or a grandparent, those of you who've lost a spouse, a brother or sister, or even a child. I know that if you're like me, you talk to them. You bring them into your life. You talk to them. Why? Because you know that what was given to you in this life and celebrated is never lost. Is never lost. There was a priest friend of mine whose mother had died shortly after his ordination. And he kind of took care of Dad. Dad was there in his life, so he was kind of the caregiver. He was an only child, so he basically kind of was there for Dad. Dad had now made it into his 80s, and they were going to do a very severe a cardiovascular operation on him. And he was with the father. Now the son had been a priest well over 25 years, and he's sitting there talking to his father, related to me as the conversation. And he said he didn't know how to approach that, but he said, "But Dad, you know, this is going to be a real serious operation. You know that?" He says, "Yeah, I know that. Dad, no, you may not make it. You may die." The father looked at him and said, "John, you're the priest. I trust in God. I turn it over to God. John, you should be telling me that. I shouldn't be telling you that." They both had a chuckle. He says, "Okay, Dad. I know you're prepared. I know you're ready. But I just wanted to make sure that you knew." The son had got up from a seat and started to walk away, and he said, "Oh, John." Turned around and said, "Yes? If it happens, I'll say hi to Mother for you." You know what that says? It says, in our sense, that nothing is lost, that those people that we love are and continue to be. They may not be here in the material world, but we are not only people as believers of the material, we are people who believe that the spiritual is also part that connects us and makes us whole of who we are and who we are called to be in God. We don't let go, we turn over. We don't let go, we turn over. Who do we turn over? We turn over that person to the love of God, which cherishes them and us, and who holds us forever. Today, the church, in her wisdom, has us focus on the souls. Has us focus on especially the aspect of purgatory. And you know what? Let me tell you, purgatory makes total sense to me. Total sense to me. I mean, outside of our mothers who thought we were perfect, there is no rational reason for thinking that we are perfect. The only aspect that gives us the hope for that perfection is the person of Jesus, who calls us into a relationship and offers us his love that elevates us. So we're not perfect. So when we go to God, there is kind of a sense of purgation that needs to happen. We need to challenge ourselves in those things that we have done in the past, those things that are unresolved, those things which we know we need to turn over. In my family, I always loved the fact that the sisters taught us pretty well in grammar school. And the sisters would never let us forget to pray for the most neglected soul in purgatory. I don't know if you ever think about that. And you know why we never think about it? Because if you've gone to a funeral at any time, you know that in the eulogy, it's not a eulogy or not even a post-homiletic reflection, it's a canonization of the person. You know that. And I really would love to read the minds of many of the people who were there at the funeral as the person is being extolled, and rightfully so by people who love them, they're being extolled. Really? What about the rest of the story? About what about the other times when Fred did this or Fred did that? You know, it's really a wonderful sense. One of the aspects of a funeral is sometimes what the funeral does is it tries to celebrate life here, material, now, instead of understanding why we're celebrating the funeral, which is the sense of the resurrection, the sense of the world that's yet to come, the embracing of God who offers us that aspect of the resurrection in and throughout this life, who lets us never forget that this is not it. It's not over here, but yet continues on in the love of God. I had one experience as basically a new pastor where I just basically came into the parish, and there was a very prominent family in the parish, and the husband had died. And he was very brave. He was a wonderful man who did many, many good things. And of course, his friends were very excited at the funeral and wanted to pay tribute to him, so they came up to me and they actually used these words. Do you mind if we offer a hymn? You know, so they used the word hymn, post-communion, and we've got the singer to do a hymn, his favorite hymn. And I said, sure, fine. So I sat in a presidential chair, and this very distinguished man with a beautiful tenor voice got up, and he started to sing Frank Sinatra's My Way. Now, I am left with a dilemma. The dilemma was, I could stand up, I could stop the man from doing that and say, that's not a hymn that I know of, you know. Or I could use it as a teachable moment. And I decided the latter, to use it as a teachable moment. So he finished this very beautiful song. He did a great job with it. Would have been fine if it was Las Vegas Show Club. And then I got up and I got before the casket and I said, with all due respect to the chairman of the board, Frank Sinatra, I said, Stan is here in this church today, not because he did it his way, but because he did it Christ's way. You see, that's the whole aspect, is our relationship with the Lord. When we hear that first reading, it's because we wear Christ. We die to ourselves so that Christ lives in and through us. So now it is Christ that we are offering to the world. When we come to a funeral, it is the fact is the first thing we do is we take holy water and we sprinkle it with the casket, a reminder of the baptism where that person was brought in to Christ. We put a white pall over it, reminder of the promise of the resurrection. Everything points to life at our funeral, not death. It's not a celebration of death. It's not a celebration of an end of the accomplishments of this world, but it's an understanding that faith takes us beyond this, that this person is now held by God. In purgatory, we take a look at doing and reflecting upon those things in our life that needed attention. And it's an offering on the part of God. Because if you think about that aspect of purgatory, it's individuals who we can pray for, who we can support. I have often said to my seminarians when I was teaching for 19 years in the seminary, I say to them, you know, oftentimes individuals, and we know at funerals, will say this person immediately is in heaven. And canonization basically occurs. I said, I know I don't have to tell you that if anyone ever does that at my funeral, stand up immediately and tell them, he told us in class that he wanted you to pray for him. Why? We dismiss the relationship too quickly. We substitute ourselves for God in God's love and mercy. In prayer, we open ourselves and call upon God to intervene on our behalf, for his mercy to be extended to us. and not to be presumptuous. We need to understand our ability to pray for those who have died. We need to embrace that love which has been given to us in this world by God and see that as a sign of resurrection and life. And we need to do our best to manifest Christ's presence in receiving Him into our lives and sharing them with our brothers and sisters. Praying for the dead connects us to the sense of the resurrection which we all long for. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.